The Ballad of Liam and Chantel by Stephen Stockford. Read by Liam Gerrard. You can chop up her face, remove an eye, but, you know, you might still just need her. Love, eh? Liam is bored. He's been stuck in this shithole of a police station for days, and Mr. Delmont, his toad-faced solicitor, just drones on and on. All Liam has heard is that the bitch didn't squeak, so the filth don't have nothing.
Of course, the police may well ask you to attend the station, say, once a week. Hardly a hardship in the circumstances.
Liam grunts. His gaunt face draws the skin tight over his cheekbones until he offers an ugly grin. He knows the police don't give a monkey's if you no-show on bail. Mr. Delmont continues his box-ticking to ensure his client is fully appraised of the situation.
They've rescinded the Rule 43. It is not within the police's remit to classify you under the Mental Health Act without reported crime.
Big whoop.
I feel I must caution you about speaking to the press. As you can imagine, they...
Delmont winces. Liam sneers, thinking to himself, "Gay boy, just say it."
In cases like this, I mean, where there has been an assault, of this nature, it arouses a prurient interest, shall we say, particularly with an attractive teenage girl.
Yeah, keep stum. Liam grabs his hoodie and, with a waft of cheap roll-ups, heads for the door.
Mr. Delmont disguises his disgust with a wipe of his nose. But I also caution you to avoid seeing her.
No longer listening, the teenager leaves with his usual hunched gait, his shorn head stuck forwards, a bull looking for a fight. Delmont smiles. The legal aid for this rapscallion will pay for his family's Tuscany breaks for years to come. Liam struggles to find the trauma ward. Trust that dumb bitch to make it hard for him. It's not helped by the hangover from the previous night's celebrations. Even Uncle Tommy turned up.
You're a winner, you cunt.
You know you've arrived when Uncle Tommy gets you a celebratory pint. The nurses ignore the ill-dressed young man, moving like a whirlwind through the wards. A mother clutches her children closer to her as he passes, kissing them both on their heads as soon as he disappears through the crashing double doors at the end of the ward. Turns out, Chantel has her own room. Couldn't be better.
"That you, Liam?"
she squeaks in her irritating whine. How does she know it's him with all those bandages round her face? She looks like the fucking mummy. He clocks the wedding magazines on a cupboard next to her bed as he settles on the windowsill, crunching up the blinds. Down in the car park, he eyes a string of neat cars, BMWs, Audis. Uncle Tommy would cough up good for a couple of them.
"So how you doing?" he asks, eyeing the room for what he'll need. Then she gets tearful, of course. Stupid bitch.
"Oh, Liam, they said you couldn't see me."
"They don't know nothing."
"Knew you'd come. Really sorry. All these bandages. They say they can save me other eye."
"That's something." A phone blurbs nearby in the corridor. His senses flicker. Is it about him?
"Doesn't hurt like it used to."
"Good to hear," he says, sniffing up some coke that dribbles down his nostrils.
A muffled female voice is speaking on the phone.
But there's no concern in her voice, so he loosens up. Back to the matter at hand.
"Knows it's all my fault," she says. "Told my dad that."
"Yeah, someone needs to sort him. Causing me real issues."
"Oh, sorry, Liam. Listen, when we get out of here, I thought we could get an easy jet over to Greece."
Liam checks the pipes running in and out of her frail body as he mouths, "Stupid bitch." What if he plucked one of those colourful pipes out of her, put a hand over her whining gob?
"Liam, you still there?"
"Yeah. Greece. Sounds good."
"I didn't tell him nothing. Honest."
"They're full of shit."
"I tells him it was all so fast. How do I know who did it?"
"Great."
"And this psychologist woman, ah, she's so nice. She says it's a traumatic attack. The victim usually doesn't remember much."
"Sounds right." The previous night, Tommy had grabbed Liam's arm, sweeping him against a van in the dimly lit pub car park. "Listen to me, you little cunt. She's not saying nothing now, but she will. Be a lot of grief. I'm telling you, I know these bitches." Liam glared up at the stone-hard face with its hefty brows like an overhanging cliff, balanced at the other end of his face by an absurdly oversized jaw.
"Like I dunno," Liam says, feeling his arm ache from his uncle's grip.
"I'll sort it. I told you."
So now Liam's here at the hospital to sort it. Glancing at the flashing, silent machines around her, realising that, with his luck, if he plucked out a lead, it had just set off an alarm. There are freshly laundered pillows piled on a chair. He grins. Just press one down on her bandaged face and out go her gormless lights. With a clatter of the blinds, he slides off the sill, plucking up the top one. He sees his shadow hovering over her head like an angular bird. She hears him getting closer, knowing he's going to kiss her. What better time to ask her to marry him than when she's recovering? Her heartbeat increases. For a moment, it all falls silent. He is still, but standing close to her. Her nerves compel her to fill the silent void.
"They says I get compensation," she says.
Liam freezes.
"How much?"
"Dunno, but facial disfigurement and everything. Losing an eye, it all adds up."
"Compensation," he says aloud, wishing Uncle Tommy could hear. She giggles.
"Knew you'd like that. We could do something, you know, rent a place down the bay. Marcia says you can get a place for..."
"Don't keep going on about renting this and renting that. Does my head in."
"Oh, sorry, Liam. Yeah. In its own time, you says, yeah?"
After a moment, Liam flicks the pillow back on the chair, watching it bounce and flop to the floor. The bandages stretch as she smiles.
"Dad doesn't understand we're in love. Doesn't get it."
"Too fucking old."
"He forgets. I'm nearly 15. I finish his school next year. Get a job for us."
"School? Worse than a secure centre. Least you can play pool inside."
"They says they can hide some of the scars. You know, makeup."
"When do you get this compensation then?" he asks.
"Can't take 'em long, can it? I mean, look at me. What's there to know?"
Before Christmas, Liam and his mates put this arsehole into a coma, and his mum got over 80 grand. Unbelievable. Maybe rent her that flat in the bay. Keep her sweet. Her pussy drips to have a modern kitchen diner and a new set of pans. Thick bitch.
"Maybe look at a ring?"
Hearing the ominous hush, she quickly adds,
"Nothing flash."
She knows she shouldn't mention rings. It only sets him off. At last, she asks,
"What you thinking, Liam?"
"Nothing."
The bandaged head faces him, wanting more. He says, "About what we need to get sorted."
"Like the holiday?"
"Needs that compensation dash first, don't we?"
Liam hadn't thought about what it was like being with the bride of Frankenstein.
He would run his fingers over her scars, surprised at how rigid they sat on her face. Her unmoving glass eye gave him the willies. Hardly the sort of bitch you can parade in front of your mates in the clubs, not that anyone dared say anything to him. Being careful never to strike her in the face, no matter what she said, over time Liam found himself adjusting to the situation. Even a thick old man got used to him coming round for the footy and stopped leaving the room. So the months ground on. Liam is set next to Chantelle on hard upright chairs, opposite toady-faced Mr. Delmont in his office at the edges of the city. Chantelle has grown her hair long, leaving it draped down one side of her face. She constantly has to sweep it back to see properly. Her dad has to be there too, on account of her being a minor. The solicitor's office is more cramped than Liam expected. If you broke in here, you wouldn't bother hanging round. Mr. Delmont's voice is a whine, as dull as the air conditioning throb from the machine over the window. He has his notes, and he needs to go through them point by point to ensure that procedures have been met. Even these dense clients must understand exactly what they have achieved with the Criminal Injuries Board. Suddenly, her dad sits upright in disbelief.
How much?
Well, there are prescribed amounts for injuries, Mr. Delmont says, grimacing as if sharing the disappointment.
But her faces!
Her dad is on his feet, his cheeks bruised red, his body animated with outrage. He cannot say the words and admit to himself that his lovely daughter has been mutilated for life by the arsehole who is holding her hand.
I am afraid £52,250.69 is the amount the Criminal Injuries Board have deduced as the appropriate figure. We could appeal, but then they would hold back the payment. It is truly the view of myself and others in the practice that...
She's only got one sudden eye,
the irate father pleads. Her dad is going off on one, and Liam just wants the cash and to get out.
Loss of an eye was calculated at £7,989.32. The facial disfigurement accounted for more.
But she's so young.
They recognised that with the hardship element listed at £4,932.14.
Liam isn't listening. Just over 50 big ones. It would take him a year working with his Uncle Tommy to pull in that. Uncle Tommy is at his best, stinking of beer, his hulk filling his glistening new Mercedes, Liam all ears in the passenger seat.
It's getting short of the body you gotta be up for. Any tool can slot someone, especially a girl as thick as that ugly tramp. No offence.
The allotments, Liam starts, knowing he's going to be cut short by his all-knowing uncle.
Tommy snorts. Oh yeah, what you on about? You going on university challenge? The bastard's got heat seekers in the helicopters. No burying.
Pigs! They'll eat anything, Liam says,
desperate to impress his scathing uncle.
Until a year, but pigs shit out the teeth and hair. DNA, you twat. Try thinking. You do serious time if they nail you for this. You gotta think of your mum. Get it right.
Liam is agitated.
Dunno. Fling her off a boat down the docks. They float back.
Always. Been there. Liam puts his feet up on the dashboard, admiring the lines on his stolen Reeboks before settling back in the luxurious leather seats until he sees the cold stare from Uncle Tommy. He drops his feet back down to the floor and squirms upright.
Go on then.
You're close with the pigs. This farmer's got this decomposing pit. Huge. Even dumps cows in them. Chucks chemicals, acids and stuff over them. In a few days, fuck all for the law to get hold of. I'll tell you exactly where. Of course, that'll be £15,000. Ready's well spent if you ask me. So long as I can get rid of that freak.
The farm Tommy knows is miles out of town.
Tommy wouldn't drive them on account of the traffic cameras and Liam can't involve anyone else, so they actually get the bus out to a village 12 miles from the city. Beside him, Chantelle is excited, fidgeting like a kid.
"Where are yous taking me?"
She knows it must be special. He rarely takes her out, let alone outside the city. Could this be the big moment? "You'll see," he says flatly. In profile, with her good eye facing you, she still doesn't look too bad. The scars are settling down, becoming part of her. But Liam is already screwing another tramp, Shannon Marie, the recycling manager's daughter, so he needs to sort out Chantelle, like, right now. They drew out the compensation from her account the day before, and it's stuffed under his bed in his Batman game box. His two older brothers are serving time for a post office robbery, and his mum has moved in with Uncle Tommy, so he knows the cash is pretty safe. 50,000 quid, all under his bed. To keep her sweet, Liam even went ring hunting with her in the afternoon. What a waste of time, the shit she puts him through. Over a coffee in the mall, she pulled out a heavily creased wedding magazine with teacup stains on the cover and asked him which dress he preferred. When he said he didn't care, she giggled, snuggled up to him as the magazine fell open to a tatty page. "What about this one?" she asked. He eyed the beautiful model in a skin-tight gown that was magically suspended around the model's tits and grabbed her body all the way to her ankles, like a mermaid's tail. "Yeah," he said. "Great." She laughed and slapped the table, stamping her feet with excitement.
"I knew you'd like it. Now we got the compensation, I can get it."
The bus dropped them off near an isolated, closed-down pub, with steel bars screwed across the doors and windows. The dumb bitch giggles with excitement as they watch the bus thunder away down the lane, coughing out black exhaust. Only Liam, she thought, would think of something as wonderful as bringing her somewhere special to propose. She had bought a dress weeks back, so she was ready for him. It was a lovely gold thigh-length dress from Next, with short sleeves to hide the bruises on her arms, where he grabs her. Liam helps her over a stile, into an overgrown field, and her giggling gives way to concern as soon as she eyes the darkening countryside. She hates being in woodlands after dark. It's like being in one of the horrible horror movies she so detested. Liam had walked through the fields a few days before, plotting his markers, but with the light fading quickly and the sky a dull grey with flashes of orange, he is quickly losing his bearings.
"Liam, I don't like this."
Her boyfriend doesn't answer, but she finds a smile. There he is, marching on, head stuck forward, occasionally swearing at the cowpats he slops through. No one understands him. They all hate him. If only they knew what he was really like. Gormless, but sweet in his own way. It's so exhilarating to have a boyfriend everyone, including her dad, is scared shitless of. In the murky copse, they are standing before the decomposing pit. The stench rubs the throat raw. Even in the gloom, Liam can make out the bust-up farm machines he clocked on his recce. Their murderous steel points spiking through the black-green mud. She grips his arm with both her hands.
"Liam, I don't like this. I get real scared since the..."
"Shut it," he says. "Doesn't she ever stop whining?" He needs to get her closer, but the footing is precarious, slippery, the melting ground gripping and sucking at his trainers.
"I'm stuck,"
she is crying now. Liam can't believe how hopeless she is. Holding out his hand, he tries to keep his voice even. "Get over here."
"Liam, I can't move,"
she sobs.
"Well, I didn't know he was coming out here. You think I'd have worn me best white heels? They're special."
Liam goes a bit mental sometimes. The rage will tear through him like fire through tissue. He twists around. If he gets closer, he can grab her and drag her down to the pit. But his impulsive action sends his feet skidding from beneath him. His hands jump out to break his fall, but just slice into the mud. He chews the disgusting blend of rotten meat and animal crap until he chokes on their vile odours.
Fuck.
Chantelle has never known such horror, not even when Liam pinned her to the kitchen floor by kneeling on her and set about her face, screaming obscenities at her like a mad pit bull. Not even when they carried out the operation to save her good eye, when she had to be fully conscious as the masked Chinese surgeon brought his scalpel over her face. Here she stands, glued, ankle deep in the sludge, totally helpless, as the love of her life slips through the murky surface. It is all her fault. Every time she does her makeup, she sees her scars, a constant reminder of how she's responsible for everything bad that happens to Liam. He is sliding deeper now. It is a slow, deliberate, but inevitable action. He can hear the stupid bitch screaming his name. He'll have her when he gets back. Her hands cover her face as she screams for help. She can no longer bear the sight before her. Liam and her ring have vanished beneath the bubbling surface, and she feels the icy chill of bereavement of lost love. Poor Liam. He was denied his one opportunity to shine, to give her the ring in the middle of a romantic field. All because she got stuck in the sludge. The sum total of human misery fillets her soul, as Liam had filleted her face. Beneath the surface, Liam is still sinking, the chemicals burning his skin.
It should have been her, dozy cow.
He is sinking and sliding. It isn't fast, but it is inexorable. He cannot get a grip on anything. A rock smashes his knee, but as he reaches to grab it to prevent him drowning further, it slips through his fingers. He can taste waste and manure now. The tangs fill his senses as if he has spent his entire life eating shit. The human brain offers him solace. This isn't really happening. He'll be out of this if he stops panicking. By tonight, he'll be back down the local with Uncle Tommy having a laugh. All his problems will be at the bottom of this pit, and he'll have that 50 grand under his bed. Suddenly, his bedroom seems like a million miles from here, a safe place on another planet. In a single flip, his brain moves from comfort to terror, a realization that this is a one-way journey, that it has always been a one-way journey. Not when he took the screwdriver to Chantelle's dumb, soft features, but from when he was a kid. From when he was born, he's been set on a single dirt track road, without headlamps or a map, left to bump over one mindless event after another. There was always only one destination. He screams, but his open mouth hoovers up the grim contents, and no sound can be heard. A long, thin pole has sliced through his thigh. It halts his leg, but his body continues its descent, spinning him around so he is now upside down in the oddly warm scum. He reaches down into the black depths for leverage, but there is nothing for him to push back against. Over 60 years of decomposing animals and shit envelops his being. His last thought is,
"Stupid bitch. Why were those fucking shoes out here?"